And then the Counter-Reformation, the Jesuit order was formed, and they came up with this Beliar myth about this future Antichrist, when the real Antichrist is, of course, the Pope. That's their way of looking at it. And they say, you're just getting sucked into this Catholic Beliar myth that the Jesuits came up with. And the reason I bring that up is because of verse 18, the great city, of course, to them is Rome. The seven mountains, the seven hills of Rome. And while there is some correlation in that, isn't that interesting, right? Well, my problem is this. They presume, one, that, you know, the Jesuits basically, yeah, they were reacting to the Catholics coming after the Pope. Catholics coming after the Pope.
Of course, I mean Protestants.
And you got to understand, for the past, you know, however many centuries, people had basically kind of, you know, didn't worry about the Bible very much because most people couldn't read it. You know, it wasn't printed in the vernacular. It was in Latin. They didn't really have all kinds of explanations for things. So when the Protestants started coming out with this, the Pope is the Antichrist, the Jesuits were commissioned to go in and look for an alternate explanation. And their alternate explanation was that, no, the Pope can't be the Antichrist. The Antichrist is this future figure. And so now, those who have the historical interpretation come back at anyone who believes that the Antichrist is future and saying, you've just been duped by the Jesuits. But what they fail to consider is that the Jesuits may have had a legitimate point. That maybe Luther and all of them and the Reformation weren't right to begin with when they started saying that the Pope was the Antichrist. See, because I believe the Pope is an Antichrist or has been an Antichrist at times. You know, and it was a lot easier to believe back during the time of the Reformation when the popes were really bad. But now, I don't see them as much worse than the leaders of many other denominations. I don't see how the Pope is so much more evil than the leaders of these other denominations that are ordaining homosexuals. How much worse is that guy? And is that, and so we're just going to relegate Revelation to the past when the popes were bad? I don't think so. The apostles said that there are even now many antichrists. You've heard that antichrist shall come, and even now there are many antichrists. Antichrist is a substitute for Christ. You know, when a man becomes exalted in the church or among men, yeah, he is like a type of antichrist. Like Hitler was an antichrist. He was there to save Germany. And many other charismatic leaders or despotic leaders are sort of these tyrants, antichrist type figures. The Old Testament is filled with these figures. You know, the king of Babylon, the king of Assyria, Pharaoh, these were all similar kinds of figures. History is literally packed with them. And yes, the Pope can be counted among them, at least at certain times. I mean, if the current Pope is an Antichrist, he's got to be the most lightweight of them all. I mean, not a very serious threat to anybody. So anyways, belief in a future Antichrist rests on the Scriptures. And the Luther and all them and their historical interpretation, I'm sure it seemed like a great idea at the time, but I think they were wrong. The book of Revelation isn't just this historical thing. And you know, a lot of the denominations that still stick with that interpretation, the thing is, some of them, like the Adventists, came out of these movements where they were predicting the end of the world 200 years ago. And it just doesn't ring true anymore. It's lost its flavor. And the thing is, what I see in the book of Revelation, I see we have seven churches. The Apostle Paul had taught us, I've espoused you to one husband that I may present you as chaste virgins to Christ. And you saw in the 14th chapter these virgins. You know, they were virgins appearing with Christ. But the bride is definitely, you know, come hither and I will show you the bride, the lamb, the bride, the lamb's wife. You know, in chapter 19. And that's right after this. They are set in contrast to each other. There's the bride, and then there's this whore. Why is she a whore? Why is this figure so? Because she was supposed to be a chaste virgin. You know, there's the parable of 10 virgins. 5 wise, 5 foolish. Right? There's all this imagery in the Scriptures. And it comes towards this. Chapter 17 of Revelation. The planned marriage, the espousal, and the fear, the real fear of the apostle that we could be corrupted. And you look in the first couple chapters of Revelation, 2 and 3, I mean especially, at the seven churches. You know, we have five of them, very bad reports, threatening language. I'll remove your candlestick out of its place. And when you see in chapter 11, when you see the church again in the two candlesticks, there's only two candlesticks now. There used to be seven. Now there's just two. What happened to the other five? Did they, I'll tell you what, they did not get taken up in any sort of rapture. They got caught up in the deception of the Antichrist, and they went over to him and made him their husband. And therefore, they are the great whore. They're not Jerusalem, holy Jerusalem, which descendeth out of God from heaven, the mother of us all. No, but they are rather Babylon the Great, the mother of whores. This is the mother of all whores. There's a lot of whoredom imagery in the Old Testament. I think Ezekiel, Ahola and Aholibah, Jerusalem and Samaria, her sister, the nations of Israel in the Old Testament, how they went a-whoring after idols. And this is the ultimate expression of all that whoredom imagery. Because that's the way, the analogy that God uses to when those who have espoused themselves to him, you say, I accept the Lord Jesus Christ. You're basically saying, I do. He's proposed to you, made you a promise, and you say, I accept this. So now you're engaged. That means you have a commitment. And I tell you what, in the parables, there's lots of warnings in the teachings of Christ. Not just the parables, but in just outright the teachings. If that servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delays his coming, he shall come for him in an hour which he looketh not for him. He's not going to come unto us as a thief, but he will come as a thief to those who take part in the whore. She is going to participate in the murder of the two witnesses. She is drunken with the blood of saints. The blood of the saints, when they're slain, is the most just absolute ecstasy moment for the whore church. They will be at the bottom of all the gift-giving and holiday-making and rejoicing and just absolute ecstasy. I've often wondered,